So I'm just going to give a shortish talk, and then we're going to go into an exercise in twos. So in my experience, I hear from quite a lot of people that they find the metta bhavana quite difficult to do, and find it sometimes almost impossible to bring metta towards themselves, which is one of the reasons why they find it difficult. And I think this lack of self-esteem that is so rife in the West is obviously a result of our upbringing, our education, the messages we've got when we're young as children that we're not good enough, yeah. So we're not measuring up to what we should be, yeah. And I'm reminded of when the Dalai Lama first came to the West, he was quite shocked to find this low self-esteem generally in the West, because that wasn't his experience of the culture in Tibet. But also, alongside that, we have bits of ourselves hanging out, things we've blocked and shut down in our hearts because of possible trauma, past hurt, and also messages from parents, family, teachers that we've been given. And I find that the deeper I go in meditation and practice, the more I need to address these parts of myself that have been suppressed, unattended, and ignored, in order to become more and more what's generally called in Sri Ratna a healthy individual. But in the past, I've indulged in quite a lot of self-pity, I remember, which is, I felt, has actually disempowered me. And I slowly learnt to bring light with sensitivity and kindness to those dark corners, which have been crying out to have some acknowledgement and attention in order to be resolved. And actually, all our various addictions and distractions are really an escape from addressing the underlying pain and angst. We may not be actually alcoholics or druggies, but we've all got our little addictions. And these, of course, can be in the form of food, technology, work, etc. Things we use as an escape from facing reality and coming to terms with what we are suffering from underneath it all. So I'd just like to have a little pause there for a couple of minutes and invite you just to sit with authenticity and honesty to yourself about what your particular little addictions may be. Just see yourself in life and what do you get up to in that direction? Is that clear for everybody? Just ponder that for a little while now. And without any judgment or recrimination, just see it for what it is. Okay, and I'm not going to ask for any confessions here, but I think there can be value in being in a space like this, slightly removed, and just looking at it from a distance, yeah? Because I think you've got more possibility of really acknowledging it then, and seeing it for what it is. And just that sheer fact of just acknowledging it without judgment, without crimination, already brings some light onto it. And you may find that some of it, if you do it a few times, will just dissolve of itself. And that's how the Dharma works, yeah? Where we just bring considered what Pranimati was talking last time about wise attention in a calm space onto things helps them just to dissolve of themselves. So, just to continue with the talk, we're going to look at how we can bring some real compassionate self-care and authenticity, no longer pretending to oneself or others that we're okay, putting on a brave but superficial front, but being prepared to be honest and more transparent, no more pretending and cruising and business as usual. So this is what the Dharma is asking of us. And I think in my experience within Triratna, the whole thing of spiritual friendship, it has a lot to give in that direction where we share these deeper aspects of ourselves. But going to these places can be a bit scary, and we need to resource ourselves to do this. And I'm going to call on Ratnasambhava this evening as a transcendental figure to inspire us, as it's only from that dimension that really fundamental shifts and towards freedom can happen. If we don't call on that unconditional space of awareness, then we'll always be seesawing around positive and negative, even though we might find some change on the relative mundane level of life. We've had a very wet and cloudy spring so far, and the forecast has often been cloudy and changeable with maybe sunny intervals. So we could use this phrase to describe our own inner weather and our moods, cloudy and changeable with maybe sunny intervals. So we find duality in our moods, positive and negative. But I find the term positive emotions somewhat difficult, as it suggests that we aspire to always being in a sunny mood. But I think the difficulty with the metta-bhavana is that it can set us up for a disappointment when we can't generate it in its perfect form. We can then compound our suffering by beating ourselves up for being negative and so come into conflict with ourselves. We're trying so hard to be good and positive, but for me, that's not what is meant here. Positive emotion for me is keeping that flame of awareness alight so that there is a non-conflicted space from which to bring wise attention to these scattered and ever-fluctuating states of being. And that, from this space, we do without recrimination, judgment, and all the other stuff we can get into. Just that space just allows everything to be. So we can put them in their rightful place by not taking them so seriously. Treat them as compost, as an opportunity to remember not to wallow and indulge our own inner weather. That space is the blue sky awareness. Blue sky, which is always there behind the clouds and rain, but actually also it's behind the sunny intervals as well. We tend to oscillate between highs and lows, being carried away by the highs and pulled down by the lows, in the everlasting seesaw of samsaric states. If we stay on this level, then we can forever be rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. The Titanic is sinking, but we don't know it, or we ignore it and delude ourselves in denial, and just keep fiddling on and rearranging our experience, the deck chairs, trying to convert negative into positive, and then becoming negative because we can't, and thereby remaining on the seesaw of up and down, or the dualities, instead of finding some fundamental equilibrium. The conditioned, whether positive or negative, will always bring us into conflict. And we need to transcend our narrow relative selves in order to connect with the transcendental qualities of the five Buddhas. We need to become like spiritual astronauts and let go into the vast space of wide open spacious awareness. That is the space of positive emotion for me. The absolute or transcendental level can hold all of our states with kindly awareness and not get enmeshed. So let's turn to the shrine and this transcendental space for inspiration. So we can immerse ourselves in this realm for a while and turn our attention to this shining yellow figure on the shrine. Ratna means jewel, and Sambhava, like Metta Bhavana, Bhava, means cultivation or production. So he is the jewel producing one, that's what his name means. He holds the jewel in his left hand. So the figure on the shrine isn't actually, he just doesn't have the mudra of Ratnasambhava, but if you look at the painting, this beautiful painting behind, you'll see this jewel in his heart. So this is where he holds the jewel to his heart. And then he also has the mudra of giving. So with his right hand, he's giving out into the world. So that's also not very clear in the picture, but I've also put Mamaki on the shrine, this female figure just down below, which Pranimati mentioned two weeks ago. And she actually has this mudra, but she has the jewel in her hand. Now this jewel is actually called the Chintamani, and it's the wish-fulfilling jewel. And the wish is for enlightenment for all beings. So it's very connected to what we call the bodhicitta. The bodhicitta is the wish for the enlightenment of all beings. So he's sitting there forever and ever with this jewel to his heart and giving out with this mudra of giving, this gesture of giving. Mudra is a gesture, out into the world, with out of that wish. We have to be careful what we wish for. There's got a lot of myths and fairy tales that have three wishes in them. You're giving three wishes. And very often the protagonist in the story wishes for the wrong things, or maybe he wishes for the right thing the third time. We spend our life wishing, longing, craving for things, don't we? But we need to orientate ourselves more and more towards this wish for enlightenment. Yeah. And I'm reminded of this story of King Midas, the Greek stories. King Midas, who was given a wish, and he wished that everything would turn to gold. Now you can imagine what happened. everything turns to gold. You can't even eat because your breakfast is turned to gold. So that's why we need to be careful what we wish for.
Yeah.
And wish for something really, really true and substantial. Yeah. So Mamaki, as Pranimati mentioned, her name means mind maker, which simply means you are me, I am you, what is yours is mine. Yeah. So it's about this overcoming the duality, separation of I and you, yeah, which we're lost in. We're isolated in this lone self here, looking out on all those lone selves out there. But eventually, as you go along the path, you'll come to this point of non-duality, yeah, when you go really strongly into the transcendent and overcome what we call self and other. We can start to do this in little ways by doing things for one another. Yeah, that starts to overcome the isolation we're in, and all the world does that, but we need to take another step in our consciousness and begin to connect to that. So he's wishing for enlightenment for us. That means you. That means me. Ordinary you and ordinary me. And we don't quite take that on, do we, really? I remember when I was ordained, we had three things we have to agree to. And one of them is, for the sake of enlightenment, I take this ordination. What? Me? I suddenly started to wake up. Oh, right. Oh, really? It seems such a long way away, doesn't it? You know? But it's about taking ourselves on seriously. And I don't mean that in a heavy way. I mean it in a responsible way. You know, what's brought you here this evening? Do you really mean to tread this path? Do you really mean to gain enlightenment at some point? Yeah. It's possible. It's possible there for all of us. It might seem a long way off, but the journey of a thousand Mars starts with one step, as they say, yeah? So it's about taking steps towards that continually and being focused and aware, yeah? So I've given out some jewels. I don't think I even gave myself one here. So I thought we could just for a moment take this jewel and hold it, it's yellow, and just hold it to your heart. Bring this into a bit more reality. And just feel, what is your deepest... Yeah, come and take one if you haven't got one. What is your deepest heart wish? What is your deepest longing for yourself? And the more you do that for yourself, the more you find that for yourself, the more you'll be able to offer this to others as well. It really works like that. So if you're continually denying yourself and thinking you're no good, and you're not going to make it, you're sabotaging the whole thing, yeah? So just hold that for a while. Think, what is your deepest longing for yourself? And take this mudra also, the open palm of the right hand. Get your hands right, so it's the left hand on the heart and the right hand giving out into the world, the active hand. Usually for most people, giving out. And let's just hold that for a few moments. You can go on holding it if you like. Ratnasambhava makes no distinction of worth. He gives freely to all. It's not about deserving kindness or deserving anything. It's just unconditional love. And it suddenly struck me today when I was preparing this, what we call unconditional love is it's a similar term to the unconditioned, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know why I didn't see that before, but suddenly it really went in. So that giving whatever, even if the person or yourself doesn't deserve it, is what we're at. Yeah. Keeping that flame alight, blazing it forth, shining it forth, whatever. So connecting to Mamaki and also to Ratnasambhava, this other level of awareness, means that it gives us a sense of encouragement to find our self-worth and to treasure ourselves in the search for the truth, to really take ourselves on, to take our life on. I've talked about self and others, we need to take ourselves on seriously and find our aspiration for our life and acknowledge our deepest heart wish for transformation. We need to befriend ourselves with kindness, with all our hindrances, and connect to a transcendental figure that will inspire us. There are many figures, as you've probably seen around, pictures of them and stuff, and as time goes on, you find one, or they find you, actually. Yeah. And that's a lovely moment, too, when suddenly you're lifted up into this higher sphere through the inspiration of a figure. They're all aspects of the Buddha, aspects of the Buddha qualities, these different deities, male and female. So I want to finish the little talk with just this reading. I can find. It's by Marianna Williamson. Some of you may know it. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to? Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking, so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. So, we're now going to do a little exercise similar to what we did 2 weeks ago. You might remember we went into twos, and one person gave metta to another person for a couple of minutes with saying a few words, and then we change around. Now, some people misunderstood what I said and did it in silence, but they had a good time doing that, so I'm thinking perhaps we'll have another go in silence tonight. Yeah. So I think what one can experience in this exercise of receiving metta in the moment from somebody, how nourishing that is, how deeply confirming it is of actually our innate nature, because our innate nature is kindness, actually. It's just layered over with the pollution of upbringing, conditioning, and all that stuff. And that's what we need to slowly get through the fog of in order to find our true nature, which is underneath it all, actually. So that's encouraging, isn't it? It's already there, really. You just need to unearth it. I just want to read from Bhante Sangharachita, this wonderful book, Living with Kindness, which I can really recommend. The solution for many of us lies in our relationships with other people. One way to learn to feel metta towards yourself is through becoming aware that someone else feels goodwill towards you, and in this way, coming to feel it for yourself. This can be rather tricky. When you don't have metta for yourself, you experience an emptiness, a hunger, and you look for love from someone else to fill that void and make you feel better, at least for the time being. You clutch at love, demanding it as compensation for the unconditional acceptance that you are unable to give yourself. But this can only be a substitute for the real thing. So with that in mind, let's see if we can just experience this for a little while.